Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 13, 2017. A South Sudanese diplomat says his government protects civilians and does not attack them.
What I know, those civilians who went to the neighboring countries, they were running away because the government was attacked by the rebels and the government forces were engaging the rebels. It should not be interpreted as if we are the people, our forces are the ones displacing the civilians. We cannot accept that.
And South Sudanese refugee describes how he and other refugees were chased from their homes in Pajok.
The government of South Sudan is serious about the civilians, and they are trying to kill civilians, not even the rebels, because the rebels were also there before the civilians came. The rebels were in the bush, but they came, instead of fighting the rebels in the bush, they came fighting us. They came killing us inside the bush. They were slaughtering, actually.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An official with a South Sudanese diaspora community organization known as the Balanda Community Association is condemning this week's violence in Wau. Kamin Bandas says members of the South Sudan Army targeted and killed civilians based on their ethnicity. He says the death toll from Monday's killings could be higher than what aid agencies and church leaders have reported. Bandas says because it was government soldiers who killed unarmed civilians in Wau, the Kiir administration should be held accountable.
The government troops, together with the militia, they went to the rebel areas, and they actually got heavy casualties on their side. So when they came back, they started killing innocent people. And the people who were targeted were Fertit people in general, which included Balanda, the Ndogo, the Quraysh, those areas, Bazir Jadid, Nazareth, Aikosti.
The state of Wau has a government and their police and in the town. How can people just come and start shooting people in town? What was the police doing?
Unfortunately, the people who are doing this looting and killing, these are the government regular troops. These are the police, these are the SPLA army, together with the militia. One could say that this is the government killing its own people.
Your community association has got a direct link with members of various groups in Wau. What are they telling you about the number of people who were killed?
As of yesterday, there was about 80-something people who were killed. Remember, a couple of months back, there was another, the same episode of killing people. So people ran to the universities and to the churches. So the government tried to persuade them, this is some time back, to go back to their houses. People who are now being killed, these are the people who thought being in universities or churches were not the right place for them. So they went back to their places, to their houses. There are a lot of people that are unaccountable for, as we speak, because a lot of these areas are now like military zone. Nobody can get access to it unless you are a military personnel.
You say around 80 people were killed, but when we spoke to the deputy governor, Charles Ngbarende, he said only 6 people were killed.
No, that's not true. Absolutely, that's not true. You know, the government is playing a propaganda here. But the fact of the matter is, if you go to social media, you will see a lot of pictures. People are being killed. And I spoke to, some relatives there, and we as the community tried to create, some communication with people back home. We have lost a lot of people. People have died, not even 6. The government is not telling the truth.
Acting Secretary for the ruling SPLM party in Juba, Nunu Jema, made a statement yesterday asking people of Wau to stay calm. She said the government has sent a team to investigate and they will bring to book those who are responsible. Looks like the government is doing something.
This is again propaganda. I mean, how can you bring to justice your own self? It is the government troops, it is the government militia, and it is the government police. These people are in uniform. And this is happening in a broad daylight. This is ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. It is ironic. And you can't even, like I say, you can't bring yourself into justice. This is the government killing its own people, period.
The way you sound, it looks like you don't trust the government to investigate into the killings. Why is that so?
We have a confirmed report. The chief of staff, Malong, General Malong, is in war. He's the one coordinating this killing and these atrocities. So who is Malong? Who does he work for? He works for the government. He works for Kiir government. So how come Kiir is going to bring Malong into book and to justice? And these people are his own people. These are their own militia.
Given your conclusion that the government cannot investigate itself, what is the end game here?
We need to disseminate this information to the international communities, to the regional communities, the EGAD, the EU, the United Nations, that the genocide is happening right in front of us. And this is not the first time. This is something that has happened systematically across South Sudan. We have seen it in Equatoria. We have seen it in Upper Nile. We have seen it in Juba. Now we have seen it in Wau, and it's now happening. And something has to be done. We are just a community. We don't have anything. We don't have any affiliation with any group, any political group. But our concern is our own people, not the Balanda people in particular, but the people of Western Bahr-el-Ghazal in general and the people of South Sudan at large.
That's Kamin Bandas, secretary of the Balanda Community Association in the United States. He was speaking to me from Florida yesterday. A senior British official is calling the conflict in South Sudan a genocide. Britain's Secretary for International Development, Priti Patel, told reporters in Uganda that fighting is, quote, absolutely tribal and on the basis it's a genocide. Patel told reporters people's throats are being slit and scorch art policy is underway. The US, Norway, the United Kingdom, known as the Troika, and Canada have all condemned attacks against civilians by government soldiers and armed opposition in Pajok. And aid workers and expatriates were also attacked last month by government soldiers and rebels. The four countries say the only solution to the crisis is political and that a serious commitment to unilateral ceasefire by both sides would underscore the commitment to peace. A South Sudanese diplomat in Washington denies accusations that the South Sudan army targeted civilians in Wau and Pajok. Ambassador Gordon Bwai says the civilians killed were caught up in what he calls crossfire. He claims rebel supporters are fabricating false information about the behavior of government soldiers. Bwai also says two senior military officials were killed in Wau this week, which he says sparked heavy fighting between government forces and rebels near Wau town.
What happened is that the rebels were the ones who attacked a government convoy. So when they were ambushed, Peter Parr was killed. And then another major, Bolshudol, was also killed, and the other officers. And then after the attack, most of these rebels already infiltrated the town, and then there were fighting. My own reading, until we see the investigation, that the civilians were killed in the crossfire.
Let's set records clear here. There are eyewitnesses who are saying that
those
soldiers...
Are not accurate, are not reliable. Some of them are against the government. So you cannot believe them.
And then why should people believe you?
If you don't believe me, then you wait for the investigation. But what I'm telling you is that the people that you, the Voice of America, interviewed are people who are against the government.
We have interviewed people whose relatives were killed. They told us that men in military uniform of South Sudan Army were going from one door to another and picking people based on their ethnicity.
That is not correct. The SPLA Army was fighting the rebels. So if there are civilians killed, they were killed in the crossfire.
Ambassador Boy, I understand that your job is to protect the image of the government, but the facts on the ground are different. There was an attack in Parajok where a whole village, a whole town was driven out. Civilians ran to Uganda, and they said
the people in military were attacking civilians.
These are testimonies from refugees who spoke to different sources in Uganda that the reason why they left their villages in Parajok is because men in military uniform came early in the morning, started shooting indiscriminately. So these are testimonies from people. And you're saying that these are people against the government.
That doesn't make sense. At Pajok, SPLA was attacked by the rebels. And you should know, John, that in any place, even in America, even in Chicago, where there is fighting, there will be casualties, the collateral, the civilians.
But the SPLA did not intend to arm anybody. No, they were fighting. Even the SPLA was chased out, and then they came back after 1 hour.
Your soldiers are on record for attacking civilians. Why would you want to deny?
I know that civilians in any conflict, even in Iraq, even in a conflict where American, the base of army, is involved, there will be casualties. We have seen that in Fallujah with American forces. But our forces have no intention of targeting civilians. Those civilians were caught in the crossfire.
Crossfire, when they go door to door? I mean, are you telling us that there were rebels inside WOW?
There is nothing called door to door. That accusation of door to door is by itself. We as a government, those who are saying that, we can even sue them. We can even take them to court because they are damaging and tarnishing the image of our army.
Why did it take the UN mission peacekeepers a week to access Parajok if you said the soldiers there were friendly to civilians?
Parajok was a war zone. There was a fighting between our forces and the terrorists and the bandits. Those UN forces sometimes either they are from another planet or from another universe. When the area is under intense fighting, you don't just say, oh, I'm going to visit. The area is under fire. What visit are you telling us?
I've been covering this conflict in South Sudan, starting from when it erupted in Morobo, in Yei, in Kajukeji, and then in Parajok, and in WOW, and all we are getting reports from credible sources on the ground that civilians are being chased from their houses. Are you telling me that these civilians who are taking refuge in foreign countries are all rebels?
What chased the civilian is a conflict. It's not the government forces. What I know, those civilians who went to the neighboring countries, they were running away because the government was attacked by the rebels and the government forces were engaging the rebels. It should not be interpreted as if we are the people, our forces are the ones displacing the civilians. We cannot accept that.
How do you feel when you engage in a business of deception? How do you feel?
There is nothing called deception, John. Some of you in the media, you say that the sky is not blue and you want us to believe it. No, we are the government. We know the situation on the ground. So what we are telling the world must be the one that is accurate.
The reports that are coming from South Sudan are from independent groups, the churches,
there
the UN agencies.
There is nothing called independent group. No.
People
this
who have no
right
interest in your business.
They have their own agenda against our government. We don't believe the reports. No, we don't believe the reports.
But then why should people believe you?
Because we have the government, we are the government. You have to believe us, we are the government. We are the one controlling the ground. If you don't believe us, and then whom are you going to believe?
That's Ambassador Gordon Bwai, who is in charge of diaspora affairs at the South Sudan Embassy here in Washington, D.C. He spoke to me yesterday. A UN panel of experts report issued last year identified Bwai as among the most prominent figures in South Sudan who consistently use their social media accounts to propagate inflammatory statements against the United Nations presence in South Sudan. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, opened a new refugee settlement yesterday in Palabek area of Uganda for thousands of South Sudanese displaced by recent deadly violence in Imatong State's Parajok Payam. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report from Gulu in northern Uganda.
Tired refugees arrived at the Ugandan border town of Ngomoromo and immediately board charter buses to the Palabek area, some 100 kilometers from the South Sudan border. UNHCR officials have set up several reception shelters at the new refugee camp to accommodate an expected 6,000 refugees streaming in from former Eastern Equatoria state area. The refugees will be given a plot of land to build a temporary house and plant a few crops to feed their families. Some new arrivals are unaccompanied children. Many look weak and exhausted from walking long distances before reaching Ngomoromo. As they step off the bus, the refugees are handed metal plates, sleeping mats, and blankets. They then queue up to receive food. Humanitarian groups like the Lutheran World Federation, the International Rescue Committee, United Nations Population Fund, and the French medical organization MSF, or Doctors Without Borders, screen the refugees for malnutrition and other diseases. Philip Paulino Okumu fled from his home in Parajok on Tuesday. He says SPLA soldiers held him for 9 days and forced him to help bury other villagers killed by suspected government forces a week ago. Okumu says he counted more than 80 bodies that he and other villagers had to bury.
Yeah, I saw them when I recorded their name. All I have the list all with their names. Yeah. 5 women and 8 are men.
A local religious leader said 135 civilians were slaughtered by government forces last week. SPLA spokesperson Santo Dominique said soldiers killed only 16 people and called them bandits. Okumu says now that he has been reunited with his family in Uganda, he wants to try to forget the trauma he has endured for the past 9 days.
After reaching yesterday in the Ngomoromo border of Sudan and Uganda, I decided now to go back again because they will kill me.
South Sudanese refugee Philip Onen says when fighting erupted in his village, he fled on foot alone and has not seen his family since.
I thought it was just a fight between the rebels and the government of South Sudan. Then perhaps at the end, then the government would rescue us and to go back to our village. But when I went back, I found somebody was already dead in my house. And then the fighting was still going on. There was just sporadic shooting here and there. They were shooting people. So we had to leave.
Onen says the recent killings in Parajok show that the South Sudan government does not protect civilians.
The government of South Sudan is completely very serious about the civilians, and they are trying to kill civilians, not even the rebels, because the rebels were also there before the civilians came. The rebels were in the bush, but they came, instead of fighting the rebels in the bush, they came fighting us. They came killing us inside the bush. They were slaughtering, actually.
Christine Lamont says she fled with her 6 children and arrived safely in Palabek. She received 3 blankets, 2 sleeping mats, and saucepans today. Speaking in her native Acholi, Lamont says she is relieved to be at the camp, but mourns the loss of her property taken by SPLA soldiers.
They came labeling all of us as bandits, yet we are not. The bandits in the bush, they are telling us to remain in our homes, but now everything in our homes was looted.
Jens Hesmon, the UNHCR subfield coordinator for Kampala, received new refugees at the Palabek yesterday. Hesmon says the camp is the second after Bidibidi to receive thousands of South Sudanese refugees fleeing violence.
Today we've transferred about 1,200 plus people from the border to this reception center here. People will spend the night in the reception center. UNHCR and partners will provide hot meals. We will provide shelter. We will provide safe drinking water, latrines, and so on. Tomorrow morning, they will move onwards to the settlement where they will be allocated a plot of land to put up their shelters.
Hesemon thanked the Ugandan government and local officials in the Lamuo district for offering the land for refugees to resettle. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Gulu, northern Uganda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a constitutional amendment committee presents its work. Find out what is in it when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Who in your family do you admire the most and why?
My father, very influential in a very modest and diplomatic way.
One of my uncle, the reason why I admire him most was he's determined and he's the type that likes to share ideas with people.
Well, my wife, because she's my leader. He's the one who give me what I want from her, for my children, even me also.
I love my young brother because we look alike, we resemble, so I love him.
I admire my daddy most because there was a divorce around 6 years and he took care of me throughout up till now.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. The National Constitution Amendment Committee has completed a draft constitutional amendment incorporating the 2015 peace deal into South Sudan's transitional constitution. The bill provides for a power-sharing government that includes the ruling and the opposition parties. The bill was presented today to the Minister of Justice, who is expected to send it to the Cabinet for ratification in the coming days. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Gichira Kibara heads the Constitution Amendment Committee. He says if lawmakers pass the amendment, no one can do away with the power-sharing form of government that will be written into the Constitution.
The establishment of a collegial form of government with power-sharing between the president and the first vice president. Critical decisions are made after the two leaders have consulted and mutually agreed on the course of action. Such decisions include appointments to high office in the state, declarations of war or emergency, the making of the budget, amendment to the constitution, and amendments to legislation.
Under the 2015 peace agreement, the transitional constitution must contain a power-sharing ratio in the executive body of 53% for the Republic of South Sudan, 33% for SPLM in opposition, 7% for the former detainees, and 7% for other political parties. The Constitutional Amendment Committee was established under Article 13 of the Peace Agreement with the mandate of preparing the transitional period and forming the transitional government of national unity. It is also tasked with drafting the Constitution Amendment Bill. Chapter 1, Subsection 13 of the Peace Agreement states that the committee should perform its work within 21 days upon the signing of the agreement in 2015. The amended constitution was supposed to be the basis for forming the current transitional government of national unity. Kibara says the committee could not meet that deadline for several reasons.
Some of the areas that were problematic in the beginning was whether the then speaker could chair the first, preside over the first sitting of the new transitional assembly. At that time, the main issue was whether that incumbent speaker would chair. That was overcome, obviously. Another issue was the presidential advisors, whether the president should have advisors and appoint them. And again, it was resolved by the committee that there was no challenge at all. The other issue was whether there should be by-elections during the transition period.
Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila says the amendment committee's work was delayed because of what he calls circumstances beyond the capacity of the parties.
And my role as the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs is to take the bill as it has been brought, to be domesticated, to be part and partial of our constitutional law, and to be adopted by our transitional legislative assembly.
Federal Affairs Minister Richard K. Muller represents the SPLM-IO on the Constitutional Amendment Committee.
The process has been very successful in the sense that we were meeting, all the parties were meeting and going through the agreement as well as the constitution and seeing where they were in conformity and where they were not in conformity. Where they were in conformity, we passed them. Where they were not in conformity, we suggested amendment in accordance with the terms of the agreement.
The committee is expected to review other key legislation in the next few weeks, including the South Sudan Elections 2012 Act. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Most of the countries where Arab Spring uprising took place have failed to achieve democratic and social reforms. A new study says one reason for that may be the lack of women's rights in those nations. VOA's Jody Kapua reports.
The study says history has shown that before constitutional rights become a reality, civil rights for both men and women must already be in place. These include freedom of speech and movement, the right to own property, and freedom from forced labor. Published in the European Journal of Political Research, it says those rights were lacking for women in most Arab Spring countries. The research method was developed by the Swedish firm VDEM, or Varieties of Democracy Institute, along with the University of Gothenburg and the University of Notre Dame in the U.S. Political science professor Stefan Lindberg is VDEM's director.
Varieties of Democracy is a big international research collaboration with over 20 universities involved, many of them from the U.S. And we look at various aspects of democratization and survival of democratic regimes.
Researchers reviewed the state of democracy in 177 countries, from 1900 to 2012. They used lessons learned from earlier studies on evolutionary biology.
By doing so, we were able to uncover this relationship that nobody has really seen before, that women need to be given a certain level of civil liberties similar to men in order for democratization processes to lead to full democracy and democracy then survive.
But Lindbergh says authoritarian rulers are often opposed to women having civil rights because they pose a threat.
If society in themselves sort of keep the other half down by not allowing women to participate in civil society organizations, exercising freedom of speech and organizing their own organizations and so on, then the potential of mass of people that can organize against you is only half. Whereas if women have the same liberties as men, then you have an increase of 100% of potential protesters, organizers against the autocratic regime.
He gives some examples of women playing a major role in democratic reforms.
So if we look at countries like Brazil, Chile, Peru in the 1980s, it was a lot of women's organizations that organized the pro-democratic resistance. The autocratic rulers, the military in Brazil and Pinochet and his gang in Chile and so on, didn't really think that women would be threatening. So they let them be, and they became somewhat of a vehicle for organizing against these military rulers. We've seen similar things in Africa, in places like Sierra Leone and Guinea.
Men were perceived as a greater threat, usually receiving more police beatings or being arrested. Professor Lindbergh says Tunisia is the one bright spot in the Arab Spring, with moderate success towards democracy, at least in the short run.
We don't know what's going to happen in the next 10 years, obviously, but as of now, Tunisia is sort of doing the best. And there, women were given very advanced property rights and organizational rights and so on already in the 1950s. So there you have a long tradition of women having much more of civil liberties compared to other Arab Spring countries.
He says the seeds of change can even be found in Morocco and Algeria. Democratic change can come even if women don't have all the rights men do. Lindbergh says it may take at least 25 years, and sometimes there are setbacks. But he says people should not be discouraged if things are not moving as fast as they would like. He warns that quick, radical change often cannot be sustained. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that report by Joe DiCapua brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with a new song, Gira Batal by Lomerica San.
Time.
We have been listening to Lomerica's son with the song Gira Batal, which means jealousy is bad. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for sharing your evening with us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Can